The person on the other end must have agreed readily enough, because she asked, "How does 6 o'clock suit you?" And then said nothing more than, "Okay, thank you. 6 o'clock it is," and hung up. Reacher said, "The sisterhood comes through."
"Brotherhood,"
Pauling said. "The woman whose name I had seems to have sold the business. But they were always going to agree, like that 1062 thing you tried with the general. What if they have to come to New York? If we don't help each other, who will?"
"I hope Edward Lane doesn't have a palm pilot full of London numbers."
They showered and dressed again and walked down to the subway stop at Lancaster Gate, or in London English, to the Tube station. It had a dirty, tiled lobby that looked like a ballpark toilet, except for a flower cellar, but the platform was clean and the train itself was new and futuristic. Somehow, like its name, it was more tubular than its New York counterparts. The tunnels were rounded, like they had been sucked down to an exact fit for the cars, like the whole system could be powered by compressed air, not electricity. It was a crowded 6-stop ride through stations with famous and romantic names: Marble Arch, Bond Street, Oxford Circus, Tottenham Court Road, Holborn. The names reminded Reacher of the cards in a British Monopoly set he had found abandoned on a NATO base as a kid. Mayfair and Park Lane had been the prized properties, where the Park Lane Hilton was, where Lane and his 6 guys were due in about 18 hours. They came up out of the Chancery Lane station at 5:45 into full daylight and narrow streets that were choked with traffic. Black cabs, red buses, white vans, diesel fumes, small 5-door sedans that Reacher didn't recognize, motorbikes, pedal bikes, sidewalks thick with people, boldly striped pedestrian crossings, blinking lights, beeping signals. It was fairly cold, but people were walking in shirt sleeves with jackets folded over their arms as if it was warm to them. There were no horns and no sirens. It was like the oldest parts of downtown Manhattan lopped off at the 5th floor and compressed in size, and therefore heated up in speed, but also somehow cooled down in temper and made more polite. Reacher smiled. Certainly, he loved the open road and miles to go, but he loved the crush of the world's great cities just as much. New York yesterday, London today. Life was good. So far. They walked north on Gray's Inn Road, which looked like being longer than they had anticipated. There were old buildings left and right, modernized on the ground floors, ancient above. A sign said that the house where Charles Dickens had lived was ahead and on the left. But for all that London was a historic city, Dickens wouldn't have recognized the place. No way, not close. Even Reacher felt that things had changed a lot in the 10 or so years since he had last been in town. He remembered red phone boxes and polite, unarmed coppers in pointed hats. Now, most of the phone boxes he saw were plain glass cabins, and everyone was using cell phones anyway. And the cops he saw were patrolling in pairs, blank-faced, dressed in flak jackets and carrying Uzi machine pistols in the ready position. There were surveillance cameras on poles everywhere. Pauling said,
"Big Brother is watching you."
"I see that. We're going to have to take Lane out of town. Can't do anything to him here."
Pauling didn't answer. She was checking doors for numbers. She spotted the one she wanted across the street on the right. It was a narrow, maroon door with a glass fanlight. Through it, Reacher could see a staircase that led to suites of rooms upstairs, not dissimilar from Pauling's own place 3,000 miles away. They crossed the street between standing traffic and checked the brass plates on the stonework. One was engraved, "Investigative Services, PLC." Plain script, plain message. Reacher pulled the door and thought it was locked, until he remembered that British doors worked the other way around. So he pushed and found that it was open. The staircase was old, but it was covered in new linoleum. They walked up 2 flights until they found the right door. It was standing open onto a small, square room with a desk set at a 45-degree angle so that its occupant could see out the door and the window at the same time. The occupant was a small man with thin hair. He was maybe 50 years old, He was wearing a sleeveless sweater over a shirt and a tie.
"You must be the Americans," he said.
For a second, Reacher wondered how exactly he had known. Clothes? Teeth? Smell? A deduction like Sherlock Holmes? But then the guy said,
"I stayed open especially for you. I would have been on my way home by now if you hadn't telephoned.
I didn't have any other appointments." Pauling said, "Sorry to hold you up."
"Not a problem. Always happy to help a fellow professional."
"We're looking for someone," Pauling said. "He arrived from New York 2 days ago. He's English, and his name is Taylor." The guy glanced up.
"Twice in one day. Your Mr. Taylor is a popular person."
"What do you mean?"
"A man telephoned directly from New York with the same inquiry.
Wouldn't give his name. I imagined he was trying all the London agencies one by one." "Was he American?"
"Oh, absolutely."
Pauling turned to Reacher and mouthed, "Lane." Reacher nodded.
"Trying to go it alone. Trying to bilk me out of my fee."
Pauling turned back to the desk. "What did you tell the guy on the phone?"
"That there are 60 million people in Great Britain, and that possibly several hundred thousand of them are called Taylor. It's a fairly common name. I told him that without better information I couldn't really help him."
"Can you help us?"
"That depends on what extra information you have. We have photographs. They might help eventually, but not at the outset." "How long was Mr. Taylor in America?"
"Many years, I think."
"So he has no base here, no home?"
"I'm sure he doesn't."
"Then it's hopeless. Don't you see? I work with databases. Surely you do the same in New York. Bills, electoral registers, council, tax, court records, credit reports, insurance policies, things like that. If your Mr. Taylor hasn't lived here for many years, he simply won't show up anywhere."
Pauling said nothing.
"I'm very sorry, but surely you understand."
Pauling shot Reacher a look that said, "Great plan." Reacher said, "I've got a phone number for his closest relative." Chapter 58.
We searched Taylor's apartment in New York, and we found a desk phone that had 10 speed dials programmed. The only British number was labeled with the letter S. I'm guessing it's for his mother, or father, or his brother or sister. More likely a brother or sister, because I think a guy like him would have used M or D for his mom or dad. It'll be Sam, Sally, Sarah, Sean, something like that. And the sibling relationship will probably be fairly close, or else why bother to program a speed dial? And if the relationship is fairly close, then Taylor won't have come back to Britain without at least letting them know. Because they've probably got him on speed dial too, and they would worry if he wasn't answering his phone at home. So I'm guessing they'll have the information we need.